This podcast is brought to you by Slumber. Do you ever have trouble falling asleep? Maybe you can't stop thinking about a bad day or all the things you need to do tomorrow. Soon enough, it's 3 a.m. You're not alone. One in three Americans report not getting the sleep they need. And you need great sleep in order to thrive in whatever you're doing. Better sleep helps improve performance, whether you're trying to climb the corporate ladder or you're just trying to learn a new skill. That's why we're partnering with Slumber, the number one app for sleep. With Slumber, you get a library of over 100 calming stories and meditations designed to help you fall asleep fast. Slumber's stories and meditations are especially designed to help you drift off peacefully. I should know, I've not only worked with the team over at Slumber firsthand, but I've also been a user of Slumber ever since I saw it in action. As someone who spends 100 plus nights in a hotel for work, a good night's sleep is critical to my job function. Slumber helps me get that night of sleep. Don't just take my word for it, though. Slumber has over 8,000 five-star reviews and was recently featured as Apple's App of the Day. Join over 1 million people in trying Slumber for a great night's sleep. Search the Apple App Store for Slumber. Download tonight and get a 7-day free trial.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Developmentor podcast. I'm your host, Grant Ingersoll, and my goal in each and every episode is to highlight all the different roles that go into building a great tech company, as well as the paths people take to get to this point in their career. On the show today is a self-taught developer who's had a variety of both individual contributor and leadership roles focused on shipping product that customers actually want to use. These days, he's a developer and open source advocate who, in addition to still coding, is a tech author and in-demand keynote speaker, primarily focused on two big emerging trends in technology: serverless applications and container management and orchestration via a project named Kubernetes, which of course we'll link up in the show notes. Please welcome to the show, Kelsey Hightower. Kelsey, great to have you here.
Awesome, glad to be here.
Hey, Kelsey, you know, thanks for joining me. I mean, in one of your bios online, it says you've worn pretty much every possible hat throughout your career. So how about we start things off then by you just spending some time introducing all those different hats?
Yeah, so I started out in, you know, more of that tech support role, you know, answer the phone, get people support in web hosting. So I used to work at a company called Server Beach, and owned by a company called Pier One. And this is back in the day before cloud, right? When you're just getting like a $5 shared VPC, or if you really had some cash, you can get your own server, like one. No VPC, you get that server. And then of course you don't know what you're doing, so you call whatever the 1-800 number is, and then someone would help you with your Linux problems, maybe patching. Back then people were running things like Plesk, you know, little web UI to help you set up email and domain. And so I kind of cut my teeth on that customer service part. So you have a lot of empathy for people who just want to use the technology, and you got to have those quick answers, right? So you need to learn a lot about a lot of things and just have those quick answers. And at that job, I realized that in tech, that's probably one of the most valuable assets you can have, is if you can get people back on track so they can focus on the thing that they were doing before the problem came up. That's where the gold is, right? So whether you're a system administrator, which I was classified at as then, or you're a director of a whole engineering org, that's kind of the goal, is to work towards being able to do that. And there's really many avenues to do that. So when I look over my career, I've taken that theme across lots of roles, whether you're a system administrator, I've worked at companies like Puppet Labs that produce these configuration management tools where you kind of write infrastructure as code to deploy your stuff. And there was a big connection to the open source community, where your engineering skills and the ability to solve people's problems and understand them all came to play, and just variations of management, engineering, system administrator across multiple verticals and industries, but still working beyond the title, regardless of what it is.
Wow, that's great. And I think I've seen a few talks of yours on this notion around customer empathy. And it's one of the things I try to do with my devs when I hire, is like, hey, you know, you need to come in and spend some time actually understanding customer problems in order to be more effective engineer. Maybe expand on some of your thoughts there, because I know you've put out some really good content around, you know, this notion of being customer focused within engineering.
Yeah, so I think, you know, analogies help people best, and I think in these regards. If you think about if you are a painter and you paint houses for a living, that's what you do. You have the best tools, you do it the best, and then someone says, I would like you to paint my house, and I'm going to go on vacation, and when I come back, I want my house to be painted. And you don't ask any other questions. You just paint the house with your favorite color, what you think is hot, what you think they want. So you just guess the whole time. And the thing is, that's not very customer driven. You're just doing something. Yeah, you got the house painted. You even got it painted on time, maybe even under budget. I'm like, hooray. But then the customer comes back from vacation is like, whoa, why is it this color? And also, why'd you paint the brick? No, I didn't tell you to paint the brick. Like, who would even do that? So the customer empathy part is about, as a customer, how would they want this to go? So ideally, a customer may want to know or maybe even pick their own paint choices. So when you start to think about a business of painting, you might want to walk around with samples of colors so that the user can pick a color before they leave. You may ask them common things like, should I paint the brick or not? Most customers don't get their brick painted. As a homeowner, I wouldn't want someone to paint my brick either. So those are things that give you empathy, so that way you don't just make up things as you go, and it just makes you better at your job. And we translate that to software engineering, where a lot of times engineers will get a task from maybe a product manager or maybe a bug report. And if you blindly go implement that thing, that's very equivalent to painting the brick. What you want to know is, like, what pain is the customer experiencing? Can I reproduce it with my own hands? And you start to think and feel like, I see the problem. I think I have a solution that will address that and maybe even delight the customer.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And imagine then that bringing that forward into your career now or into your role now, perhaps can you spend some time talking about your role in Kubernetes and this position of developer advocate, if you will?
Yeah, so, you know, if you strip away the titles, the day-to-day is to be customer zero yourself. So you got to use this stuff. You got to be building with this stuff, right? So I'm not necessarily building a company myself anymore on these. I've done that in the past. But I do try to deploy the things that real people would deploy. I try to tweak and tune them. I try to follow performance guides to get all the performance out of these deployed things. And then what you start to find out is you hit the friction first. You say, wow, it's way too hard to configure MySQL on Kubernetes. Should I even be doing this? And if I was to do this, what's missing from Kubernetes to make this happen? Now, as a customer myself, customer zero, I only have a finite set of use cases, right? I can't explore everything. So one thing to keep myself grounded and to provide, you know, a great feedback loop, I love to go on site with our customers, whether they're startups, large existing companies, you can think the Fortune 200. And I like to just spend time on a whiteboard. What are you trying to do? Put it on the whiteboard. And I bring my computer and I like to try to answer these questions with either quick prototypes, maybe show them exactly how I would go about it. And you just riff a little bit. And then I come back and say, wow, our product is way too hard. After that road trip, a meeting with various customers across different verticals, it's way too hard to do such a task. The product has to get better. Here's my prototype on what better looks like. We have design docs internally at Google. You can work with product teams to specify that thing. But you do it in such a way that when anyone reads it or touches the prototype, they really feel the customer experience. So then when we ship the product, the customer's like, wow, someone gets it that built this.
Yeah. So I imagine that, I mean, you know, that's a really interesting role in the fact that, you know, A, you've got to be really quick on your feet, right? B, you've got to be able to kind of code on the spot there, right? Or at least be able to kind of wire together things. And then C, you know, being a really good listener. What other kind of skills go into those kind of scenarios where you're, you know, just right there on the hot seat, if you will, and this account may or may not, you know, kind of may hinge on your actions there.
Yeah, that's a really good point, where there's lots of deals where, you know, all sales organizations have what they call the win wire, right? You see your name as someone who contributed to the win. And some of these deals are pretty large.
Yeah.
And in those win wires, they call out the impact that you've made to either move the needle or cause the needle to drop and the customer get on board. And so when you start to think about the skills here, you know, when you think about the skills in this kind of role, someone introduced me to jazz, right? I always knew of the genre. Like, what? Why are people so, you know, fascinated with jazz, right? I love my hip hop, I love R&B. And someone said, when you listen to jazz, a lot of it is improv, right? When you go see a live jazz band, that song that you know from them, they're just going to play together and just try new things. And you just go with the flow. And it's very organic, it's very natural, and it's quick on their feet because they're really great musicians. So nothing really throws them off, right? You can go off and do something new on stage and they'll just roll with it. Actually, they're expecting it. Hmm. So as a customer myself, I'm always playing with our products and services and just understanding what the industry's doing. And that's like me learning how to play various instruments, how to tune my own guitar, how to make sure that no matter what the vibe is when it's time to go, I can adjust on the fly, right? Because I know the instrument well. I'm not just trying to play the exact notes or the exact song as written. I'm okay. I can go left and I can go right and I can bring it back into the center and make it feel natural. So that's what I think the number one skill set is, the flexibility and just knowing how things work and map that to just real world context. And that really makes you clever. So I would say the number one skill where I developed that is as a system administrator, right? You're trying to manage software that you didn't write. You deploy it, right? It yeah. falls over. You get these cryptic messages in the log, and all people want is that thing back up and running as quickly as possible. So you get real clever, real fast.
Yeah, the good old reboot. Always try that one if you
exactly have right.
Yeah, that's fantastic, and I think you know I've seen that in my own career too. And you know the beauty though of a role like yours, unlike the jazz, is it's okay sometimes to say, you know what, I don't know. But you can't just say, I don't know. You have to say, I don't know, but let me get back to you. I will find out. I know somebody who knows. And that perhaps leads then into my next question is like, you know, perhaps reflect on one of the consistent themes on this show so far has been about how you go about building relationships, right? And in your case, you're building relationships with the customers, but you also have to build relationships into the community, into your internal development team, so that there's this trust factor that Kelsey's a guy who's gonna tell us the truth. He's gonna tell us when he doesn't know about it. You know, spend some time, you know, perhaps reflecting a little bit on some of those key relationships and how you've built them.
Yeah, I would say over the last 10 years, I've been very careful not to go on social media and talk about things that I haven't put my own hands on. Right? I want to touch it and just say, what does this feel like to me? Would I use it in my current context? Would I use it to solve past problems? Is this thing legit or not? And once you have that own hands-on experience, it's easier to be authentic as long as you keep it real. Like you can't be a paid talking head, right? You can't say, hey, Kelsey, I would like you to tweet this, or I would like you to say this exactly. That's not very authentic. People want people who are authentic. Even if you're wrong,
yeah,
they will appreciate you putting an opinion as long as it's rooted in honesty. So over 10 years of working in these open source communities, you start to build a reputation. I have a lot of popular libraries on GitHub where scratching my own itch, you open it up for others to use. So that whole notion of a person who's building things, sharing things, really goes a long way in building community and trust, because you know some of these projects are, you know, 3, 4, 5 years old. You're sharing knowledge, so you're really impacting the careers of other people. And you start to do that long enough. So before going to Google, I kind of had a decent, you know, community vibe going. I had a good social media presence where I kind of had a name for myself built around this integrity and this trust. And also the skills, right? You can see a lot of my code on GitHub. So you know that there's not a lot to assume or guess about my abilities. And then what you do is I spent a majority of my career making people better. Meaning, I think someone just tweeted yesterday, you know, they pinged me on the DM and said, hey, Kelsey, I have a question about something. Just want to know if I can get your 2 cents. And I recommended that they choose their mode of communication that they're comfortable with. And we just do it live, back and forth. And nice. All your only goal there is that I want this person to be the best person they could be. And let me give all of my secrets to them and look forward to what they can go and accomplish with it. And really boost their energy levels, boost their confident levels. to the point where they go shine and do more for others. And if you do that for 6-7 years, you build a base of people who you've supported and will be there to support you.
Wow, that's fantastic advice. I mean, I think so many of us in the tech community, you just think, even if you're a contributor to open source, it's just like, hey, here's the code. But thinking of it as a way of building trust amongst fellow humans, that's a really fantastic way of looking at it. Speaking of the code, I think in doing my research and in the opening, I said, and correct me if I'm wrong, that you were self-taught on coding. So, what's the backstory there? How'd you, you're in tech support and you say, well, hey, this coding thing doesn't look so hard. Is that how it got going? Or what's the story there?
Yeah, so I elected not to go to college, right? So, I grew up single mom, working fast food job. And you're like, I didn't know anyone in my family that has ever had a tech job. So that really wasn't a career path early for me. It's one of these things where I don't plan on working in fast food all my life out of high school. So what else do you want to do? And I remember how accessible I thought learning tech was, right? I remember going to like Barnes & Noble and you pick up some of those books. And those books, like for $35, you get hundreds of pages of just knowledge and wisdom and how to do something. So I committed myself deeply to just starting to understand Linux, how the kernel worked, build my own distro, just entrenched in it. And then I decided, like, this is what I want to do. And there's lots of details there. But if we fast forward to the part of, I now have a job and you're hopping between jobs because you don't know what you're doing. You want to go and experiment with things.
Yep.
But then I started to notice that once you learn to program, then the thoughts in your head become reality in the tech world, right? It's like learning to read and write.
Yeah.
Once you can put your thoughts down on paper, then they outlive the short-term memory. They outlive you, and they can grow into bigger and better things. So when you're in tech support, you get really good at what you're doing. But then you start to understand, like, why am I keep doing the same thing over and over again? There has to be a way to take what's in my mind and put it in a tool. And I think for us in tech, and you know this well, like once you write that little utility that then gets shared around the team, you become a toolsmith. And as a toolsmith, then you can capture that and then move on to something else. And that's when I fell in love with this idea of taking what's in my mind and turning it into a utility that I could use and others.
Yeah, that's great. I used to have a friend that said, anytime you had to do the same thing more than two times, you better automate it, right? So you start throwing together these bash scripts or whatever your language of choice is for that stuff. So yeah, that's fantastic. And then you basically leveraged that into this, first the DevOps movement and then these days with Kubernetes into, a really deep understanding of what users care about in these systems. So speaking of Kubernetes, I want to shift gears a little bit. And I know you co-authored a book titled, which we'll link up in the show notes, titled Kubernetes Up and Running, Dive into the Future of Infrastructure. I personally would love to really geek out with you on the book itself, but I instead want to talk about what it's like to be a tech author, right? Because this is about career. So why write a tech book? What was the motivation? What was the process like for you?
So that book, I started by myself for about a year, and you just get to a roadblock where you just can't finish it. You don't know how to finish it, right? So, after about 100 pages, you're just like, now I feel like I'm just filling in the blanks. And, I don't know how to bring this over. So I brought in two co-authors, Brendan Burns, now at Microsoft, one of the original co-founders of Kubernetes, and Joe Beta, also one of the original co-founders of Kubernetes. And they came in, they did a really good job of filling in the blanks I didn't even know I had. So they brought an additional voice to the book. So those two came in probably a year later, maybe after 6 or 7 chapters had been kind of put in play. And they filled in the gaps. And I'm glad I did it because it gave more of a balanced view to this whole Kubernetes thing that I think really took off. And that book is still performing well, at least according to the bank account. And I just thought the book needed to exist because, again, I had so much in my head that you can only get if you went to a conference or I talked to you directly. So I wanted something to scale those ideas. And that's how that book, landed. And also there's another piece of, I guess, documentation that I keep up to date. And that's Kubernetes the Hard Way. Mm-hmm. And Kubernetes the Hard Way was written to give people a very deep dive into how to build Kubernetes from scratch. And what made me excited about that one is that's how I learned Linux, right? I learned mm-hmm. Linux by following a book called Linux from Scratch. Yeah. And I was like, I want to give that to other people. And man, that thing has taken off. And yeah, so that's just me giving back to the community.
That's awesome. You know, and that feeling that there's out there, there's some, you know, 10-year-old or 15-year-old Kelsey wannabe who's building Kubernetes from scratch right now. That's such a good feeling. I too, as a author of a book, can relate to the pain comment though as well. This is not a money making endeavor, at least directly. Usually,
well, so. I got lucky. That book makes money. But that's I'll great. Tell you, the thing is, I think one of my favorite tech books is the C book by KNR.
Yeah,
you know, the C book is like 100-something pages.
Yep,
and that's all you need, right? And I think a lot of times is you can't try to solve or teach everyone everything. You need to decide what your book's going to be. Is it going to be an intro? Is it going to be intermediate? Is it going to be advanced? And I think 100 pages can hit a real sweet spot if you cut the fluff, get straight to the point, and then maybe work on volume 2 or an add-on. So I think going forward, if I ever do this again, 100 pages are going to be my mark. And then I'm just going to ship it and tighten that thing up.
That's a great goal. I know there has been some trend in publishing that way too, because people kind of want these quick things they can consume. So sounds like you're onto something there. You know, so you seemingly live on the road these days. As I mentioned in the lead in here, I mean, I think you're traveling a lot, you're speaking a lot. And, you know, in that kind of role, you have to pretty much be on all the time, right? And so I was kind of wondering, how do you manage those in-between moments so that you can stay fresh and relevant?
Yeah, so I try to balance it out. So I try to not go on the road more than 2 to 3 days max a week. If I'm on the West Coast, I go in the morning and I'm home by dinner.
Yeah, nice.
So family first. I love being at home. I work from home. But there is no substitute for getting in front of the people you're working with from time to time, and more importantly, the customer. So I really do enjoy engineering at home, getting these prototypes, getting these solutions, taking everything I've learned from the previous set of customer visits and engineering deep dives, and then showing up and then being able to do the next whiteboard session or the next executive briefing in front of real people. And that's what keeps me grounded to reality, that this is just tools helping to solve problems. And I got to stay sharp, right? So it's like being a professional athlete. You need to stay sharp. You got to write code. And in my case, I like to write code every day. I wake up around 4:30 a.m. and I'll just hack on something to make sure that I still got it. And also, I want to see some of my ideas and solutions come to life. And that's the way I get to do that.
Yeah. Wow. Fantastic. 4:30 in the morning. That's that's no small feat. So, so then, you know, reflecting a little bit, and before I go into the next section where I like to talk about kind of what's coming up, you know, if you were to reflect back, you know, what might a younger Kelsey be surprised to know on how things have turned out for you in your career?
Oh man, I'll tell you, the one thing I would tell younger Kelsey is that you're fine the way you are. And it took me a long time to realize that. I spent the first part of my tech career, the first 5 to 10 years, literally trying to figure out who should I be like? Should I be like this person? Should I be like the Unix gods, like Ken Thompson and Dennis Ritchie? Should I be like the professor that I never had? Should I learn to speak a certain way? Should I dress a certain way? What does it mean to be a tech professional? How do I get people to respect me, right? Yeah. And then you stress yourself out. And then some people call it imposter syndrome because you're trying to impersonate something you're not. So if you're trying to be an imposter, if you're trying to mimic something else, then you may always have imposter syndrome because that's kind of what you're doing. You're walking around as an imposter. What I learned now is that, you know what? It's okay to say it's dope. It's okay to bring my real life into my work. It's okay to be who I am. And what I found is it's refreshing to most people.
Yeah.
You're different. You're you. I remember Kelsey's talk, not necessarily the talk that you gave. And that means a lot. So then you can now focus on you and how do you make yourself better versus comparing yourself to everyone else.
Wow, that's spot on. I think all of us always struggle with that, and I think no matter how good you even are, right? Like that's always something that, you know, getting comfortable with yourself at the end of the day is all you've got, right? So that's really well said. I very much appreciate that, Kelsey. You know, so shifting gears, I like to spend a little bit of time kind of talking about the opportunities and challenges in a role like yours, which is this, you know, developer advocate and product manager and all of that. And so what do you, you know, as you look forward into the next few years, and maybe it's anchored in Kubernetes, maybe it's not, but what do you see as kind of the main opportunities and challenges that are sitting in front of you or in front of this role in terms of advocating for a particular project or particular ideas?
Yeah, so I think the number one thing is, you know, just anyone, I think this is general guidance. Like the role is how you get in, maybe get hired, maybe how you map things initially. Mm-hmm. But then you quickly realize that most people that are very influential or impactful have to share a set of shared traits, right? So the ability to find solutions to problems. Don't really care what they are, but if you're in a role that's surrounded by problems, your impact is going to weigh heavily on your ability to produce solutions to those problems. And there's many ways of doing that. Sometimes you're writing code. Sometimes you're teaching someone something new. Sometimes you're teaching yourself so that way you can understand the problem better before you go and attack it. All of those things, I think, are the things that you should do in any role. Now, if you come in and you say, I'm a developer advocate, remember that imposter thing, and you start comparing yourself to what you think in a developer advocate is. Oh, maybe I'll go talk at some conferences. Maybe I'll write some code samples. Maybe I'll file some bug reports and friction logs about our product. That's what I'll do. I'll just do a lot of it, and I'll be the best at doing that. And what you'll find is you're going to get burnout. You're going to get tired of it. It's going to be real boring because that's not the job. Right? That's just the HR description of the job. The real job is to use that arena, to use that kind of flexibility in terms of the role and decide, how do I make impact for the people who pay me, right? Like if it's your job, then you work at a place and hopefully you work at a place where you believe in the technology and what's going on. So now what your goal is if I'm going to get on stage to talk about what, right? I want to talk about things that I found that work for me, I found that work for others that I'm working on or excited about. So I'm here to share my knowledge so you can also move forward. And then you want to assist the people who are building and in some cases selling their product, right? So if you have a product that you believe in, it should be very easy for you to go out and tell a customer, here's why I believe in it. And here's why I think it's the right solution for you. And here's why I think it's the wrong solution for you. Having that ability is what I think will make you super impactful regardless of the role. I just like this developer relations role because of the flexibility, right? I don't think the best use of my time these days would be 100% behind a keyboard fixing bugs and shipping new features. I think for me, I have a broad range of things that I can cover from DevOps, some of the cultural aspects of delivering software and value for customers and businesses, all the way down to implementations and workarounds for dealing with reality. So for me, I want to be in a role that affords me the flexibility to exercise all of my areas of expertise.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Let's expand a little bit on that delivering product side of it, because I know you've given a number of talks on engineering culture. And you know, as part of what I'm trying to do here with this podcast is really show all the different things that go into, all the different people and roles that go into building great tech companies. So, you know, perhaps reflect a little bit on your view of how do you build great engineering or technology companies?
Yeah, let's just start with a simple example, right? So, you know, some founder, maybe you're the founder, and you start an insurance app, okay? Your app is going to change the world because they all do. And you want to revolutionize the insurance industry, right? So you want to do car insurance is going to be your first market. But you want to leverage technology to solve this problem, right? So you go out And the first thing you ship is a proof of concept to get a few customers, right? Put in your information, I give you a quote, and hopefully you don't crash more than I have money in the bank so I can actually make a profitable endeavor out of this. Get more customers on board to distribute my risk, right? That's the core business of it. Everyone is doing that or can do that. So that's not where you're going to do well in the marketplace. So now you want to leverage software and technology and all of these things. So think about that. So now you join this organization, helping them get from this base core thing to something that customers find very pleasing. So one trend we see in the insurance industry is charge by the mile, right? So instead of charging people this kind of every 6 month premium, you can say, look, if you don't drive very much, that's very low risk for us. We're going to pass that savings down to you. And let's go from, let's try a new model. And to sign up for this, you need to remove the friction, because one thing, if I have insurance already, I typically am not looking to change that every week. This isn't Netflix, right? So it's like that quote needs to be fast. So here's an opportunity to use technology. Wouldn't it be nice if I can take a mobile phone, take a picture of their existing insurance card, and extract all the information that would have been three or four screens in a web form just to make the quoting process seamless and quick? So then you would say in that product meeting, let's start from the user experience. I, as a user, do not like filling out five screens to get a new account or quote. That's why people aren't signing up with this. It's too friction. What about this experience? And then people see that experience and say, yo, that's magical. We like that. Then you go build the implementation. Maybe you use someone else's, you know, machine learning library or some service that can do OCR and extract the text and yada, 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 yada. Those are implementation details, but it's what you're implementing. So being a part of a product org, there's a product manager who wants to continuously improve the upside of a product by making it easier to onboard, enjoy the service while you have it, innovate in the marketplace, set up profitable pricing. On the engineering side, you want to make sure that the business understands all of the possibilities and technology available. Mobile is out. Machine learning libraries are just one API call away these days. There's no reason for you not to take advantage of all of these things that are available to the average consumer with your application to improve your standing in the marketplace.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. And then, you know, at the end of the day, I think, you know, ship it, right? Like ship it and then go meet with customers and get that feedback, right? I mean, where you're learning from what your users are doing with it, right?
And that's the magic of the feedback loop. So whether you're in a sales engineering role where you're helping the sales team, you know, try to close that initial deal, or you're in a DevRel role where you want to go out and you're talking to people, you know, what are you currently using? Why haven't you looked at us? What are we missing the mark on? Is the vision correct? Are we telling the right story? Is the product even any good? What are your concerns? Or why did you leave us?
Yeah.
And then what you want to do is take that feedback and say, yo, we can make this product better. We can win some of those customers back and be way more attracted to the customers we don't quite have yet.
Yeah, beautiful. So well said and so important. You know, Kelsey, it's been awesome to have you on the show. Lots of really good nuggets in there for our listeners to unpack. To wrap things up, though, I want to ask just one final question. I think maybe you hinted at this in various parts here already, but something to ask all my guests, which is, you know, just what's the advice you would give to someone who wants to follow in your footsteps?
Don't,
or your best career advice, if you will.
Yeah, I would just say, look, you can definitely look at the path that other people have traveled just to kind of get a view of the landscape, maybe seed a few ideas in your mind about what's possible. A lot of times that is very helpful for people to take inspiration. You know, once a man lands on the moon, then we know we all can go to the moon. So yeah. I think there's definitely a lot of value in understanding what boundaries others have hit. And one thing you have to understand at that point, though, is that, you know, now you know that those things are possible. Don't be afraid to be yourself and come up with things that you've never seen anyone else have done, or just don't limit yourself, right? And I think it's okay to be yourself. And one piece of advice I got that really made that resonate with me, I was at Puppet Labs and I just started and I was very ambitious. I saw a big, big problem. And I remember I tackled that problem on my own. I didn't, you know, go through the full review process in there. I said, let me just get this thing done. build a prototype, check it in, and I'm going to show it off on the Friday engineering demos to show people that, hey, this is possible. I've done it. Of course, it needs a little bit of polish, but let's get the idea out there. And I put it out there and everyone was nitpicking, like, oh man, that's not going to be easy, or blah, blah, blah. Or did you think about this? I was like, look, all that stuff is addressable. I just proved that it's possible if we really want to do it. And I don't know if I was getting a little bummed out that people chose to nitpick instead of figure out how to get this thing over the ultimate finish line. And one of the, he was the lead of UX. His name was Randall, right? Had a nice bald head and a long beard. I thought he was going to float away at any minute. And I remember, and he was like, yo, that was freaking amazing. And don't worry about what people are talking about, because they've been talking about this for a long time and then you did it. So Don't be afraid of your own power. And that stuck with me forever, because I started to understand is that you all have something to contribute as long as you're not afraid of it.
Yeah. Nothing I can even add to that, Kelsey. That's amazing advice, and I hope our listeners will take that to heart. Kelsey, I want to thank you so much again for joining me on the Developmentor podcast.
Awesome. No, it's been amazing, and I love this format, and thank you for having me.
Yeah, thanks again.